So hello, everybody, and welcome to our Stay in the Sweet Spot special guest call for the month of August. And today we are privileged to have speaking with us Dr. Jim Otis. Dr. Jim Otis is a chiropractor, a chiropractic neurologist, and he specializes in a lot of stuff related to brain, post-traumatic injuries, and things that can affect the way your brain functions. And he has special interest in sleep, and he has developed a technique called brain time, which he'll tell you more about, which has to do with reprogramming your brain with sounds that can actually help you to get your energy back, to focus better into sleep. And the experience I had with bringing Dr. Jim into one of our calls with our NEPT, our nutritional endocrinology training, and speaking there, is several people in there went, oh, let me try out this brain time thing. And people who had had difficulties falling asleep for decades started to get good night's sleep within just a couple of days. So I want him to talk to all of you because we know how important sleep is for keeping your blood sugar balanced. We know how important sleep is for keeping your overall health in balance, right? For getting the detox pathways working, for balancing things out, and for helping you to feel better the next day. So without further ado, Dr. Jim Otis. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's really great to be here. So I had prepared a slide presentation. Some of it might be kind of redundant now, given what you've covered. So maybe I'll just really briefly go through that, some of that stuff. We'll dive more deeply. And Rita Marie, guide me, like, you know, more detail, less detail, that kind of stuff. And I'm fine taking questions as we go. And we could talk for days. About
of course
this.
We could, right? So I would love, you know, review is always good. But, you know, if it's going to be like all the little nuances of why sleep is important, you know, you can agree with that. But I'd love to see the slideshow. I think it would be awesome.
Okay, great.
I think it would be super helpful. And for those who didn't make it, we'll put it on the website. So.
Okay, great. So I'm going to share my screen and then let's go to... forgive the technologies. Okay, here, just a second. Where to go? Okay, Rita Marie, are you seeing the screen?
Yep,
the
absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, great. Okay, good. So let's just jump right in. So just on a really personal level, let's look at what happens when we don't have one night of good sleep. So the big overview of what I'd like to cover today is how important sleep is. You've already covered that. Why, you know, really motivate you to help your family, help you get good sleep, to not, you know, put it as second tier in terms of your importance, in terms of your healthcare. We'll talk really briefly about how sleep affects blood sugar, and I understand that you've already covered that. Look really briefly at how widespread the problem is. I want to talk really briefly about sleeping pills and why you do not want to take those, or the risks, you know, the really high cost associated with doing that. And then most importantly, some of the natural solutions, which I'm sure you've covered in great detail. And in particular, with a focus on what's happening in our brain and how we can shift the functional connectivity in our brain. So that's the really, and that the end point of improving functional connectivity in our brain, and I will define that term more and apply how it affects our life. Is that it helps us sleep. It helps us fall asleep, stay asleep, wake up rested, all of that kind of thing, manage stress better, think more clearly. There's a huge number of benefits about really optimal functional connectivity in the brain. So that's where we're going to get to. So let's start with just one night of poor sleep. And everything that I mention here has thousands of studies behind it. So this none of this is conjecture. There are thousands of studies. So just one night of poor sleep has a whole host of effects. It decreased memory the next day, lower IQ the next day, decreased productivity, more inflammation, and you're very germane to this talk, more trouble with blood sugar dysregulation. People get the munchies more, they're more hungry, you know, if you haven't had a good night's sleep. But what happens when it becomes more chronic? And chronic, what we mean is more than 6 or 7, less than 6 to 7 hours of sleep for 3 weeks or longer. And that becomes what we call an independent risk factor. And an independent risk factor means is we're going to control for smoking and exercise and all these other factors that do affect diseases. And we're going to take those out, statistically control for that, and just look at sleep. And so it is what we call an independent risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, weight gain, cancer, depression, inflammation, and the list goes on. It's longer than this. And so you'll recognize these are the major causes of death in our society. So sleep deficiency, there's nothing more important than getting a consistent good sleep. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't. And I'll back up and say, so we went one night, we went a month in terms of what's defined as chronic problems with sleep. 1 week of restricted sleep, less than 6 to 7 hours, puts people who were not previously in a pre-diabetic range in a diabetic range, in a pre-diabetic range. So in essence, it has huge implications, not just on blood sugar, but on every major disease, morbidity, mortality kind of stuff that's affecting our society. Unfortunately, most people do not get enough sleep, period. And that's children and adults. And so these major, institutions, World Health Organization, CDC, have, been concerned about this and has said, hey, we're actually, we would describe this as an epidemic of problems with sleep, poor sleep. And I want to define what, Rita Marie said, hey, my biggest problem is getting into bed. And oh my goodness, Rita Marie, you're not alone with that. That's a really big number of people. So let's break it down a little bit. So 65% of people don't get enough sleep by the optimal level being 6 to 7 hours at least. 40% of those people say, wow, I get into bed and I just can't sleep. And we call it involuntary. Mm-hmm. And then another 25%, they said, wow, I really got to catch up on my work, or now the kids are asleep, so I have time for my social media, or it's a voluntary thing. And, and a lot of us who are busy, it's like, oh my goodness, it's really inviting to, to stay up a little bit late and get that project done that we've been working on for a while. But we're going to talk about, that's about all I'm going to talk about right now about the voluntary end of things. I mean, I hope that at this point in time, we've laid enough groundwork and with the last 2 weeks, the two previous times when you've discussed the importance of sleep, and then just these statistics that I mentioned right now, that we are all really motivated to get to take care of the voluntary part. So we're going to help our family get good sleep. We're going to help our friends. We're going to become missionaries for, evangelists for good sleep. So now we'll talk about the involuntary.
Can I just add something right here, Jim? You're talking 6 to 7, below 6 or 7 hours being what's defined as not getting enough sleep. But in reality, when we look at studies on blood sugar and insulin resistance and diabetes and other conditions, including excess appetite due to the hormones that get out of balance, really we're looking at 7 to 8 or 8
That's
to
right.
9 being That's optimal. Right. So, insufficient, really cut and dry. If it's below 6, you are not getting enough sleep.
No.
But if you're below 7, it's not optimal. If you're below 8 even on a regular basis, it's probably not optimal. So I just want to, kind of throw those things out there.
Yeah, totally. Totally agreed. And these are studies. This is all like the 17,000 studies, kinds of stuff looking at this stuff. And then, totally agreed. And then it's important to start looking at, you can break it out, deep sleep and REM sleep and all that kind of stuff. And there are a lot of good apps that do that now. Now this is a really, I think all of us, if we're not all aware of this, this is important. The way that sleep issues are addressed by the mainstream medical establishment in this country are, well, number one, if you really need it, what I can get you is a sleeping, a sleeping medication. There's a couple pieces here. Number one, they're not that effective. They studies have shown that on average, they only give you 11 minutes more sleep per night. Okay. So it's not that much. And there are really significant risks associated with the use of those. And then a lot of people say, hey, I feel cotton-headed the next day and I just don't feel great, you know, using these things. And so this is a doctor, Dr. Kripke, who has been one of the leading researchers about the problems with sleep medications. They're often called hypnotics. And so he spearheaded this, but this kind of work has been replicated by dozens of teams, or at least more than 10 teams around the world. And there's a really interesting little statistic that's hidden in here. And so on one axis, you see hypnotic doses per year. So that's the number of sleeping pills that you take per year. And then on the vertical axis, you see the risk of all-cause mortality. In essence, how likely you are to die. And he has demonstrated that simple 1 to 18 times per year, in essence, like once every 3 weeks or less, will cause, let me get out this thing. It causes, and these are all really well-designed studies, matched cohort studies, and people who take 1 to 18 pills per year or once every 3 weeks or less often are 3.8 times more likely to die in the next 2.5 years. It's just like unbelievable that this stuff is still on the market. And it has, and to me, it's like, I mean, how does this stuff even happen? And so there is a, this website I'd recommend checking out, thedarksideofsleepingpills.com, Daniel Kripke, and you'll find a lot of references to all other. This is not unique to Daniel Kripke's work. And there's like a lot of studies, peer-reviewed studies, high-quality studies. So anyway, so that's, now we've covered the importance of forging your own path in terms of taking care of your sleep, to not rely on what the average medical doctor is going to give you in terms of helping you. If you're in that, you know, 40% of people who have trouble and involuntary trouble with sleep, they say, I lie down and I can't go to sleep. Or there's two kinds of sleep, you know, primary easy categorizations of sleep problems. One is sleep onset insomnia, where I can't fall asleep. And another is sleep maintenance insomnia, where I can't stay asleep. And there's different physiological underpinnings of that kind of stuff. But, and then that's 40% of it. But now 40% of people, now we know, really, if you have to use a sleeping pill, do it. But it's like, you know, just know the cost, the potential cost. Okay, so now we're going to get a little bit into the physiology of sleep and how it keeps us healthy, why it's important. And there's a number of different, just a whole bunch of different reasons. One is that when you are sleeping, your brain is getting rid of toxins. It's cleaning itself. And so there's 10 times more lymphatic drainage around your brain during deep sleep, stage 4 sleep, than during the regular waking day. So that drainage is hugely important. The cells literally start to shrink and the pathways around them open up, and so there's more circulation. And then it allows the removal of debris that's been building up over the day as we go through our day. And so right now we're all engaged, we're all focusing, and then our brains are working. Our brains are the most metabolic right now, the most metabolically active part of our body. They're you know, is 2% of our the body weight, and they're 20% of our blood flow, or 40% in situations like this. It's huge. So there is a metabolic debris that gets built up, and then that's why we need to remove it. The chance to remove it is during deep sleep. And so just think of, you know, hey, sleep is when the garbage truck comes and clears all the garbage from your brain. Now, there's other reasons how just these physiological importance of sleep. And I mean, for a long time, you know, scientists just couldn't think, or not just scientists, but, you know, people, well, why is sleep important? You know, we're more, we can't defend ourselves. Why? Every animal sleeps. You know, why? You know, what's the health benefit of this thing? You know, it's like, we're not productive. We can't defend ourselves, you know, blah, 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 blah. And so now we're just starting to elucidate some of the pieces of, you know, how it affects our well-being. And one of them is this term synaptic scaling. And so you've heard, hey, we're building synapses in our brain. You know, that's how we learn, learning grow, little connections in our brain. And you've heard the concept that our brains are tremendously plastic, i.e. they can change. And oh my goodness, they really do change way more on an ongoing daily, minute to minute, second to second basis than most of us appreciate. And so these synapses, these little connections between, you know, between the neurons in our brain, 70%, that's 70% of them change every day. So it is huge. And we get an increase in the number of synapses as we go through the day. And that's just not sustainable. So at night, we clear out a lot of those synapses. We scale them back. And that is kind of analogous to filing the paperwork on your desk. You know, like, you know, at the end of the day, you file your papers and you put them away and you throw some in the trash. It's kind of like that. So, and it helps us consolidate memory. And I don't know how much you've talked about sleep, but, you know, which aspects of sleep you've talked about, but you learn better when you sleep. And so if you're exposed to some information, you get time to sleep, and then you are tested on it. If you have that sleep interval between the exposure and the recall, you do better. And that's called consolidation of memory, learning and memory. So the list just goes on and on. Sleep is hugely important for our immune system, and that's gotten a lot of press now with COVID. You know, well, what can you do? Well, make sure you get good sleep, because it keeps your immune system healthy. We've already talked a bit about blood sugar regulation, and then emotional regulation is really important. That as our brains are stressed. And lack of sleep being a stressor. As our brains are stressed, the evolutionary newest parts of our brain go offline first. And we revert to more primitive style of functioning, which means less regulation of our emotions. So we're more emotionally labile. And then we also tend toward a sympathetic dominance, a fight or flight kind of thing. So we're more on edge, we're more jumpy, we're more nervous, we're more anxious, we're more irritable. And that's just really common. You know, if you have one night, you know it. It's like, oh man, I kind of lost it with my kids. And then, you know, the next day, you know, I didn't get enough sleep, you know. So anyway, there's multiple ways in which sleep affects our health. Now here's a really key concept, that a healthy brain supports good sleep, and an unhealthy brain creates poor sleep. And it's a cycle that just goes. And so good sleep helps your brain, a healthy brain helps good sleep, you know, and that's a virtuous cycle, but it can become a vicious cycle if you get poor sleep and your brain degrades, and then it's harder to get good sleep. And so it becomes a cycle. I spent my career, the big focus of my career was really working with people with brain injuries, concussions. And like, oh my goodness, it's just so common after any kind of brain injury that sleep gets deregulated, dysregulated. Okay, so that's a really key concept. So now we're gonna get into a little bit about a big picture about how do we protect our sleep, enhance our sleep. And I want to go into the concept of circadian rhythms. And let's talk about just rhythms in general, even bigger than circadian rhythms. Then we'll come into circadian rhythms. That every aspect of our physiology, every aspect of nature, every aspect of just everything in creation goes through cycles of rest and activity. So a cycle of more activity and less activity, more activity, less activity. And we see that these cyclic energetic sweeps through our physiology that we can measure on an annual basis, yearly basis, a monthly basis, an hourly basis, a daily basis. So let's talk now about circadian rhythms, which are daily rhythms. And there are, number one, they are ubiquitous. Every tissue in our body exhibits these rhythms, whether it's our brain, our hormones, our immune system, our digestion, certainly our sleep. And then every form of life, from very primitive to very advanced, all of us, you know, as inhabitants of this planet, have a daily rhythm that's about 24 hours. And so the more stable that rhythm, the healthier we are. And so so unstable rhythms, whether you measure it with, if you're doing, you know, blood tests of hormones, you know, cortisol level, or, you know, whatever it is, if that rhythm is not regular, you're not healthy. You're not as healthy as you could otherwise be. And so we want to stabilize our circadian rhythm. And the best way, and luckily we have tools, we have help, because these rhythms are in our environment. And that's how we tune to our environment. So we are very sensitive to light. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard, you know, turn down your blue light at night and, you know, that kind of thing, watch your computer screen, and there's night shift screens now, and you know, all that kind of stuff, and you want to get bright light in the morning and the midday, and that'll help seasonal affective disorder. And so these rhythms of light are, they occur in nature, and they affect us, they affect our brain, they affect our sleep. So let's talk a little bit more now about how to entrain our brain and our physiology with rhythms that stabilize the circadian rhythm. And that will help support sleep. So the first piece, and I believe one of the most important pieces of sleep hygiene, by hygiene, I just mean, you know, how, like you're brushing your teeth, you're taking care of your health, you know, so sleep hygiene, is to have a regular sleep and wake schedule. Same time to bed, same time to wake. And it's kind of boring, you know, well, I wouldn't say that. Some people might think it's kind of boring, but your body will thank you. And there are some really fun little examples that illustrate this point pretty well. We know with absolute certainty, we can predict it every year, the 2 days that have the highest morbidity mortality. And it's not New Year's, and it's not, you know, 4th of July, it's the days after daylight savings time changes. For those areas that do, there's more hospital admissions, more people die of heart attacks. It's just that one hour shift in our schedule is statistically observable across the population. You know, when you look at hospital records and, you know, blah, 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 that's 1 hour shift. You know, that's not that much. And then there are really good studies that if you sleep in, you know, like you just sleep in on the weekend, this is called, what's it called? Social, I forget what it is, time lag, or, you know, jet lag, or whatever. If you sleep in on the weekend, you have to get up for work every day at, you know, whatever, 6 o'clock to get to work. And on the weekend, you give yourself the luxury and you sleep in until 7 or 8. It's like on that day, you have, you know, more trouble with blood sugar regulation, more trouble with inflammation, just that little shift. So our bodies really like regularity, you know, like the, you know, our conscious mind wants, and we need, you know, variety, but our bodies like, you know, like, you know, the circadian rhythm, you know, like synchronization. So I think that's all I want to say right now about a regular sleep-wake schedule. And so there are, you know, some people like to go to bed later, some people like to go to bed earlier, and there's all kinds of genetic reasons for that. You know, like theoretically, people make up ideas about, you know, like why that was evolutionary helpful, but just make it regular, you know. And people ask me, hey, what happens if I'm on a swing, you know, I work nights, you know, I'm a nurse or, you know, whatever. Then the major thing is just keep that schedule over the weekend as well. I don't try to shift it, you know, just keep it steady. And so regularity is very helpful. It's not always possible, but you know, just, you know, the concept, you know, the concept. And so we've already talked a little bit about the type and timing of light. And I imagine, Ritamer, you've already covered a lot of this stuff. You want
not
more?
As much, not, a, you know, I talked about the importance of getting early morning light for the melatonin and turning it off. Yeah. And turning the lights down at night, but that's about as far as we got. So if you have other things to add to that, that'd be great.
Sure. It's just, you know, we can kind of like think about what's the lighting like outside, you know, during, you know, during in the natural environment. And it's the highest amount of blue in the light is midday, the most ultraviolet, you know, that kind of stuff. And the more, you know, the more atmosphere the sun has to go through, the more filtered it gets and the more red that light gets. So cooler in midday, you know, in terms of the light, you know, the light color, and then warmer at night, you know, in terms of the light color again. And so we just want to mimic that. And there's a lot of apps that do that now on your screens, your computer screens and your phone screens. And you can buy lights that, you know, can shift. And there's all kinds of, you know, stuff that's coming on online with this stuff. But the type and the timing of light is a leverage point. And all of these are just little avenues in to help, you know, put a little tug on your circadian rhythm, which is, you know, we can approach it from a lot of different angles, you know. So the timing of when we go to bed, the type and timing of our exercise, the type and timing of our meals, the type and timing of the light that we're exposed to. We have a lot of avenues, a lot of avenues in. Here's another one. We have a circadian rhythm to our temperature, our body temperature. And our temperature drops during the night. And that's why, you know, lots of times, I don't know which doctors other than functional medicine doctors are doing this anymore. But, you know, you take your basal body temperature. You take your first thing in the morning and it's the lowest it's going to be all day. And so in essence, our body temperature drops at night, so we can support that swing in our physiology and sleep in a cool environment. So get your the room that you're sleeping in cool and get it dark, you know. And so, you know, the darker the room and the cooler the room, generally the better you sleep. And so we're using these external cues of you know, darkness and external cue of low temperature to help support our natural physiological rhythms, and it helps. So all of these are just, we just want to, you know, check off the checklist, get these things in place so that we up the odds of us being able to fall asleep and stay asleep, and, you know, get the sleep that we need. There's a couple of, and I'm going to go just really briefly here. Sometimes there's two major types of insomnia, and in a, you know, the sleep onset and the sleep maintenance, and in a very general way, they correlate with cortisol levels in our body, in our body, in our physiology, and also our tendency toward either hyper or hypoglycemia, and so a hypoglycemic type of presentation on average for most people will tend to correlate with sleep maintenance insomnia, more likely to wake up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. And so whatever you do to support your blood sugar from that side, you just think, okay, how could, you know, do I have any hypoglycemia? If you have sleep maintenance insomnia, just think, do I have any hypoglycemic tendencies? And let me make sure I address those really well. And then if I tend to have sleep onset insomnia where it's hard to fall asleep, okay, do I have any signs and symptoms of hyperglycemia where I get sleepy after a meal, or, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then make sure you address that. And we can come back and talk about any of these things later. I'm just going to kind of skate through them now, and we can do all the, you know, if anybody has questions about all this stuff, we can do that later. Type and timing of exercise. So we can, there's different kinds of exercise and different times of day to do it. And just in general, let's step back a little bit around circadian rhythm of hormones. And there's two really important hormones that are very intimately connected with our sleep. One of those is melatonin, and the other is cortisol. And they tend to be the inverse of each other. So when melatonin is high, cortisol is low, and then vice versa. And so melatonin goes up at night. Melatonin, there tends to be more melatonin production in our brain at night, not incidentally in our gut, but that's another story, but in our brain at night when it's dark. And then there's more cortisol in our brain during the daylight, the bright light in the morning, which Rita Marie was suggesting you get in the morning, that helps turn down the melatonin. And then if you get exercise then especially, and you add in some other things, you will increase the cortisol. So you're doing these external cues, these external environmental like signals, messages to the brain saying, hey, melatonin, get low, and hey, cortisol, get high, you know, by doing this, getting light in the morning and exercising. Exercise just is crucial for sleep. It's part of this rest and activity, you know, kind of thing that we talked about. You want good activity during the day to support good rest at night, and vice versa. So, you know, so exercise is really, really important. You know, sleep and exercise. My goodness, like how is hugely important. So it's fine. There's a lot of benefits of doing the high intensity exercise, like interval training and that kind of stuff, especially in the morning, but you know, any time of day, but especially in the morning to get that cortisol rhythm. And then any kind of exercise, gentle exercise, like all day long. Okay. So maybe let's talk now about, we've talked very generally about sleep being important for our brain. And so we referenced it in terms of, hey, if you don't get enough sleep, you're more likely to have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, every neurodegenerative disease there is. The incidence and risk of that goes up if you don't get enough sleep. So sleep is hugely important for the brain. And now let's take it and go the other way, how the brain is important for the sleep. And it's bidirectional, like everything in our, you know, kind of life. There's, you know, our gut affects our brain affects our gut, our sleep affects our brain affects our sleep. So we're going to talk about, let's just talk a bit about the brain. And so my personal, where do I want to go here? I don't have to go into a lot of this personal story, but I got interested in this. I've been doing meditation for 40 years. And so I was really interested in how one of my geeky sides is, you know, how does meditation affect the brain? You know, and, you know, all these studies of long-term meditators and, you know, morphological, physical changes in the brain and functional changes in the brain and EEG changes in the brain. I just love that stuff. In addition to the benefits of meditation, I love like learning the neurophysiology of it. And then when I was first in practice back 38, 39 years ago, my wife at the time had a head injury and she couldn't talk. And so I got interested in the brain really fast. So she couldn't talk. And so we did all of the MRIs and the CAT scans and the speech language therapy and the physical therapy, occupational therapy, acupuncture, chiropractic, craniosacral, you name it. And some of the alternative stuff would help for a while and she could talk, but it wasn't real satisfactory. So it was really clear to me that people with brain injuries, the state of the art was not where it needed to be. And so I did a lot of study and got my, you know, fellowships and all that kind of stuff in that field. So anyway, that's how I got interested in this stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about this concept that I mentioned at the onset about functional connectivity. And this is an important background understanding that's not widely it's not widely known yet. Not in like the public. It's a really hot field in neuro research. It's like big, but it's not super popularized yet. We're born with a whole bunch of brain cells, but we're not born with connections between the brain cells. So when we're born, we have more brain cells than we'll have at any point in our life. But there's no connections between the brain cells. And so as we grow, as a child matures, as we matured, then we had a big reduction, a pruning of the number of neurons, the brain cells. But we had a big proliferation of the number of connections. And that is brain maturation, is a growing of those connections. And it's often called myelinization. And so you get these connections that grow. So those are physical connections. And you can see that stuff on MRIs. You see the myelin, the white matter, all that kind of stuff. Now, and scientists have known this for a long time. Now, what's new in our understanding is how those connections are functionally regulated, how they're turned on and turned off. So we have the connections connecting one side of my brain to the other, or the front to the back, or the right, the top to the bottom, all of that kind of stuff. And what happens is those connections are only on for a millisecond or two, and then they turn off. So there's this constant shifting of connections, which connections are active in our brain, depending on what we're doing. As we're eating, walking, talking, thinking, whatever it is, there's from millisecond to millisecond, there's this kaleidoscope of different connections that are happening in our brain. And those are called functional connections. And we've developed ways to measure those or evaluate those. And they're still primitive, but we have some good ways to evaluate those. And that field of functional connectivity is one of the hottest areas of brain research for the last decade. It's really, really, really hot. And we start to understand that all kinds of issues that we struggle with as a society are, and that are recalcitrant to pharmacological intervention or medical intervention that we don't have good treatments for, are based on problems with functional connectivity. And so and it includes insomnia, and it includes, cognitive decline, memory. It includes developmental alterations like ADHD and autism. It includes just a whole, I might have another slide. Let me see what we have here about what it's, poor functional connectivity. So these are just some of the many conditions that are associated with dysregulated, where your brain is having trouble turning on and off the connections at the right time. Okay, so let's talk a little bit now about, before I go on, any questions about that so far? I wanna, before I go on to the mechanisms of how this works in the brain and the mechanisms of how we can enhance it. Okay, anyway, we have to have these connections timed at the right time. I forget which signs. They're turning on, turning off. I'm not so used to these slides. Okay, so here's another example of rest and activity, this overarching kind of theme, this cyclical activity that happens. We talked about it on a yearly level, on a daily level, with the circadian rhythms. Now, this kind of rhythm happens on the millisecond level in our brain. So every brain cell is turning on and off. The membrane potential, the electrical voltage across that cell membrane is getting bigger and smaller many times a second. And that's what we measure in an EEG. Where we look at an EEG to say, hey, you're in alpha state, or you're in beta state, or you're having a seizure, or whatever it is that we're looking at. So each brain cell is turning on and off, and that's a brilliant design of nature, because it is what allows us to do this functional connectivity. So when a brain cell is on, it can talk with its neighbors. It has its ear like this. When a brain cell is off, it can't talk. It doesn't say anything and it can't hear anything. So when two brain cells want to talk with each other, they turn on and off at the same time. And then the signals get through. And if cells are turning on and off at the you know, asynchronously, the messages just zip right by them and by each other, and they're not really functionally connected. So in essence, these timing is called coherence. There's this temporary coherence between different parts of our brain, and that shifts. And so brain cells have to speed up and slow down. And now I've developed a way to train that in our brain, the physiological ability to speed up and slow down. And that's what's the basis of brain time, which Rita Marie has told you about. It's just a physiological time. You wear headphones, and we could do it with pulse light or pulse, you know, we've demonstrated the principle other ways, but it's really easy to deliver with headphones. And then there's a timing of a stimulus that then evokes a potential in the brain and turns a group of cells on, and then they want to follow that stimulus. So we can create flexibility in the brain by presenting the syncopated signals. And then that has a lot of benefits. And this, I first started, you know, I kind of backed into this working with brain injuries, people with brain injuries, and found that it was really helpful for people with brain injuries. And then we started getting these reports from people without brain injuries that, wow, it's helping me sleep, or it's helping me, you know, my kids are, you know, they're having less trouble with their homework. So it's just a general way to support the brain and make it more flexible. And so let's see here. I'm going to scoot through these slides. Let's see. And so we've developed this as brain time. And what I'd like to do is I'm going to play a sample of the sound. And I'm hoping that I can actually get it so you can hear it. It won't be more, I'll give you a little preview. It won't be more than 30 seconds. And there you're gonna hear these little beeps, like beep, 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 beep. And there's gonna be a lot of quiet in between. And so the beeps, you won't be able to hear that right now, but generally you'll listen to headphones and it's gonna be in one ear or the other. It won't be in both. And that just kind of wakes up the brain and evokes these connections between them. Okay, so I'm going to turn off my headset here and put in another way to capture sound. We'll go for about, it'll be 20 seconds, 25 seconds, and then I'll come back and we can talk more. And just, I suggest just close your eyes or listen and hold on just. Marie, were you able to hear that?
Yeah, it took a little while for it to start, and then I was able to hear it. Everybody else, yeah?
Great. Yeah, so I apologize for that slow start there. Great, let's just see here. Okay. Let me go back to...
There you go.
Okay, let me have to jump forward. Okay, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm using this as my kind of organizer of my thoughts. Okay. I have a series. Reed and Reed talked about, you know, some of her people who had trouble for decades falling asleep. And it's just, that's not uncommon. It's not like the rule. It's like that doesn't happen for everybody. But it's certainly not uncommon. I just took a couple of reports here from people who'd had trouble for decades. Pilates instructors and massage therapists and doctors and at any rate. And this is kind of funny now. It used to be for Sandy, it used to be that her husband would always fall asleep first, and now she is, and you know, some kind of cute stuff. And we have, anyway, the most important thing here is the mechanism by which this works. And that being, it just helps your brain. And a healthy brain, remember that slide, a healthy brain promotes good sleep. And that's all it is. It's nothing magical. It's just a healthy brain promotes good sleep. And a healthy brain also helps regulate your immune system and regulate your, it's all kinds of stuff, your reaction to stress, and it helps, you know, stabilize blood sugar. So even independent of, you know, promoting good sleep, it helps that. And this might be a good time to mention, we do this as a subscription. So it's a $29 a month subscription. And we're going to, for everybody here, we're going to offer you a free month. So try it and make sure it works for you. And then, you know, if you don't continue, don't pay anything. But if you do, it'll be $29 a month. And then Rita Marie, I think you have, Wendy sent you a link that you can offer that to your folks.
We have a shortened version of it, DrRitaMarie.com/braintime. But let me check and see if she updated that. I will say, I want to mention a couple of things, but let me find it. I'm looking in my email to see if there was a new one. But right now it was set to DrRitaMarie.com/braintime. And I think that goes, check that, Jim, and see if that's the right place. And it.
I don't have an easy way to check it. If it's not, we'll get it to you.
And I'll make sure it's on the page on the site.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I know that Wendy sent it.
Here we go.
Yeah, to you.
Yeah, I think this is, let me see if this is the same one. I think we shortened it to DrRitaMarie.com/braintime because I could say that. And I
have
a hard time saying these bigger. Okay, let me see. That's the same one. And I'll put it in the chat in case it's not. Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the same one, but I'll just paste this in here and everybody can use it. There we go.
Great.
All right. You know, it's interesting with the falling asleep, like I relate to this one for years, faster. My husband literally will fall asleep within a minute. Like, he'll go in and he will lay down and I'll go in there to say something to him, or I brush my teeth and I come out and I go, already asleep, right? But he doesn't stay asleep for more than 6 hours.
Uh-huh.
And then he wakes up and he's bright and alive and ready to go, even though he wants to sleep longer. But he falls asleep instantaneously.
Yeah, that's funny.
I should have him try it, though. This might help him to stay asleep a little longer than the 6 hours. Sometimes it's only five. Yeah. There are a couple of questions, Jim. Let's see. Martha asked, do you have to use headphones? I don't have any and don't tolerate them for more than a minute or two.
You don't have to, but it works better. And so Martha, yeah, you can do it. Just play it out in the ambient air. And so the rhythms, there's so many fun little things here. The rhythms that we use that I discovered were most physiologically active in the brain are reflective of our environment. Again, it's the rhythms in our environment. So they're all based on these logarithmic scales of the Earth's magnetic resonance. And so the Earth's magnetic field fluctuates 7.8 times a second, 7.8 hertz. And it's a very tiny fluctuation, but it has significant biological implications. It's this kind of like timekeeper for that life evolved in. And it's based on how long it takes an electromagnetic impulse to circumnavigate the world bouncing off the ionosphere. So it's very stable. It's been there like forever. And so these rhythms that we use are just part of nature. And they're, and I'm going to come back to another really fun story in a second. But we augment the ability to increase functional connectivity between different sides of the brain by taking these rhythms and presenting the first note on one side and the second note on the other. So it's beep, beep, or beep, beep, and they go right to left or left to right. And so that augments the power of the rhythms. Now the rhythms are going to be fine, just independent, just out in the air, but they'll work more effectively, more, you know, it'll have a more robust effect if you listen through headphones, but you don't have to.
You saying how long do people have to do the 5 minutes or something at a time?
Yeah, 5 minutes twice a day. And what it is, it just jump starts your brain into, kind of reminds your brain about these inherent inborn rhythms. And then, you know, even after 5 minutes, the first time you do it, we see really significant, in brain time naive clients, people have never listened to it before, we do these brain maps, EEG brain maps, and we see very significant reorganization of brain function after five minutes. So then what happens in that scenario, though, you know, it organizes your brain and then it wears off. And then you repeat it again, you know, in the afternoon, and it organizes your brain and it wears off. But you just keep doing this, and it starts to stay, you know, that becomes a more permanent organizational feature in your brain, and you're happier, you're healthier, you're sleeping better, you know, that kind of stuff. Some people notice really fast results. You know, it's just like really fast results. 2 or 3 days. You know, I had a little Asperger's kid who came in, and it took him 3 hours to go to sleep. And after like the second day, boom, he was falling asleep in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens. It's not like all the time. You know, more frequently, the results build over time. It's more like analogous to, instead of flipping a light switch that way, it's more like you go to the gym and you work out. You know, and this stuff is like a little workout, and you just go every day, and you get then after a month, you notice, oh, you know, I'm more fit than I was a month ago. Yeah. And so generally most people notice results after a month, well, I'm sleeping better. I'm, you know, whatever, my word retrieval is better, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's why, shoot, I just want you to be really satisfied with this. Know that it's working for you. Try it for a month.
Yeah, that's great. And then Angelica asks, what do you recommend for patients with SNPs for sleep and mental health? Do you recommend amino acid supplements to balance brain chemistry for sleep?
Depends on what kind of SNP. You know, so any kind of SNP is not inevitable, you know, genetic, it's like determinism. Right. There's so many factors affecting it. This is just one more factor, Jeanette, to help push, you know, help your life in a better way. And depending on what the SNP is, you know, I would imagine, you know, ask Rita Marie would be my first thought. And so then that's a little bit of a punt on the answer, but it depends on what the SNP is.
It depends. Yeah, it depends. And there's so many other things that we've talked about throughout the program in terms of that. By the way, it's weeks 14 and 15. We're all asleep if you guys want to go back and review a lot of the stuff there. Rob says, I have a great night's sleep with Advil PM. Is it because chronic pain is preventing me from sleeping well?
Is that a question? Is it because?
Yeah. Is it because? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not super familiar with Advil PM and what all the ingredients are in there. You know, if the anti-inflammatory stuff is reducing pain, then yeah, maybe. And I don't know what the PM part of it is. I don't know what the other ingredients
are. Yeah. And Trina, what happens watching Netflix to go to sleep? Have you looked at the dangers of 5G on sleep and health?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's a whole nother topic here. Just in general, in order to promote good sleep, I strongly recommend having a sleep sanctuary. And so in essence, turn off, you know, the router, turn off, get your any Bluetooth, you know, like remote control away from your head, get your phone, you know, away from your head, you know, put it on, turn it all the way off. And like, oh my goodness, that'll help a lot of people sleep just right there. And so right now, you know, I want to talk about the implications for brain time right now. Right now, you get this thing online. So listen to it before you're ready for sleep. Turn off, you know, the computer or the phone or whatever it is, and then go.
So it's not something you do at bedtime, brain time. It's more something you do a few hours before.
Yeah. And we have different kinds of trainings, one of which is called sleep. And I'm going to preemptively answer some questions here. So we have different kinds of training on the website for focus and sleep and relax. And there's a whole group of them. And this is a really important concept. The sleep program does not put you to sleep. It builds flexibility in these low frequency parts, you know, these default mode network, you know, frequencies in your brain that allow you to shift gears, you know, to fall asleep or stay asleep, you know, or wake up. And so you can listen to it in the middle of the day, and you're building the structure and the flexibility in your brain to support your sleep at night. So anyway, in terms of 5G, yes, that is, I believe, a major, major issue in terms of all kinds of stuff. There's, you know, even though the FCC puts on their website that there is no, you know, scientific evidence that Wi-Fi causes problems with health, there absolutely is. That's a captured agency. There absolutely is. There are thousands of really solid peer-reviewed studies showing problems with Alzheimer's, problems with, you know, developmental disorders like autism, with genetic mutations, all kinds of stuff. So yes, just protect. It's inevitable. It's coming. And there are going to be a lot of benefits that come with it. But just protect yourself, especially where you sleep, because that's your regenerative healing time. And so literally you can turn off the circuit breakers in your house. You can, I like using these earthing grounding pads, you know, the earthing grounding pads, they actually help keep you grounded during the night. That increases your resistance to these external waves. Your body becomes almost like a Faraday cage that can resist that stuff. So whoever asked that question about EMG at night, 5G, yes, yeah. I do share your concern.
Yep, absolutely. Heather wants to know, does research indicate an ideal target, excuse me, for sleep duration, deep sleep and REM? Is there an ideal target for that?
Yes, there are, and it changes with age. You know what I like a lot? I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but... Heather, there's some apps that you can get now, like the Oura Ring is especially good at measuring sleep and breaking it down for you and telling you, hey, you got this much deep sleep, this much REM sleep, that kind of stuff. And it'll just guide you with that. And it'll change that depending on your age. I would recommend that. And I think it's about
$250. I think she has an Oura. I think that's what she might've been asking, if there's any, if you can trust, like for me, I'm looking at my Oura, and I had 7 hours, 14 minutes last night, mm-hmm. and I had an hour and 49 minutes of deep sleep, mm-hmm. but it showed in red that my REM sleep was only an hour and 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's the opposite, you know, sometimes I have a short time of sleep, but most of it's deep or REM or both. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like kind of, do we trust the app, or is there other research that might be better, like
I don't know. I that's a really good question, and I don't know. And if you find out, let me know.
Let's see. Yeah, I do have the app, and deep duration seems to be very irregular, but within normal for my age. I find it's irregular too, Heather, and it depends on the activity of the day, and you know how much mental activity is going on. And then sometimes I find that if I don't get a good night's sleep, if I only sleep for 4 hours, it'll be like 2 hours and 15 minutes is deep. I'm like, whoa, that's pretty good, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, but as long as it's staying in there within the normal range.
Yeah, that's the first priority for your body is to get the deep sleep. And so you get more deep sleep earlier in the night and then more REM later.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why if I go to bed and I have a short period of time.
Yeah.
Let's see. Rob asks, does daytime napping reorganize the brain?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay. And then, let's see. Oh, Pam says, why does it seem like seniors, folks over 80, have more sleep issues?
It's just because their brains are getting less healthy. It's not inevitable. It is not inevitable. So it's just one sign of decreasing health. We have so many tools now, and we know about exercise and diet and like this brain time technology. We have so many tools, you know, that we're going to be pushing our lifespan, like healthy lifespan way, you know, longer than what it is right now, I believe.
And most people adopt them. Like they listen to us and adopt those weird things. Like a lot of people here are really honored, you know, that you're here to make that shift, to not be part of the population who's just like falling apart.
The general population is not necessarily. Because right now our planet is so awash in toxins with glyphosate and, you know, 5G and all that kind of stuff. We really have to be proactive and be careful and, you know, and educate our neighbors and our friends and our family and all that kind of stuff about it. But I just want to be really clear. It is not inevitable that our sleep starts to deteriorate as we get into our 80s, 90s. It's just not.
So a lot of thanks from people. So I don't see anything more. So if you have any questions or you want to open up your line and just raise your hand and let me know, you can open your line and ask Dr. Jim questions directly. Anybody? No? Yes? Did you learn some new stuff? Yeah? Kate says, thank you so much. Yes. Last chance. Raise your hand. Open up your line and just speak. No, I think we got everything. Cool.
Well, I'll just say, just keep up the good work. You know, it's like all of you, this is so important. Like all of this information, all of our, you know, like it's important for us and it's important for our friends and our family and our society. And, you know, we really can be like, you know, hope for our neighbors and our friends and, you know, other folks as well.
I agree totally. Trina looks like she has something to say. I'll open up your line, Trina.
Wish he talked longer. And I thought it was a wonderful program. And the whole thing about 5G, most of the people I talk to don't even know what it means.
Yeah.
So if he knows something about it, is willing to talk about it. I have been reading a lot of articles about it. Yeah. But most of the people I know, so I think it's very important that people even know about it. And like, I know that there's things you can put up on your windows maybe to keep some of the stuff up because it's going to be on every telephone pole. And there's 53,000 satellites being put up in the sky so that you can hardly avoid the darn thing.
Yeah, yeah.
What can you do in your own house?
I missed that. Was that a question?
What can you do in your own place?
In your own house to protect yourself.
To protect yourself.
You know what Trina, I would do is find some people who are experts in remediation. And there are. I mean, I know people who've put, you can put stuff, you can paint your walls with stuff and you can put whatever. The most important thing is where you sleep. So that's the place to start. And then do the other like really simple remediation, build your resistance to the stuff. Brain time will help. That's one piece of it. You know, use an earthing pad, keep yourself grounded at night. That whole electron exchange with the earth, you know, that happens when you're grounded. I don't know if you know about this, but you can use these pads that are electrically, you have to test the grounds in your house to make sure that they're actually grounded. And then, you know, if not, you put something out the window and put something in the ground, but you physically ground, you know, the conductive sleeping surface and you sleep on it. And it's wonderful for promoting good sleep. You know, that can be a very helpful thing. And so you do these kinds of things to build your resistance. And then you just deal with it. None of this stuff is gonna like kill you in a second. So our job right now is to reduce exposure to the extent that we can and build our resistance to the extent that we can. And then, you know, and then educate people. And to at some point in time, hopefully, God willing, you know, it's like we'll have more real input into the FCC and some of these regulatory, you know, agencies.
Steve.
So keep it up, Trina. Yeah.
Steve has a question too.
Yeah, let me just. Okay, here. Well, I just want to say, I watched recently, there was a 5G summit that was incredibly helpful. And it was organized by putting the man's name there, Josh Del Sol.
Yeah.
And it was one of these summits where the host knew more, as much or more than anybody in it. And it had both scientific work of people who, I won't go into the details, but an overwhelming amount of negative influence, negative stuff by scientists that is interferes with the calcium gated channels, the voltage gated calcium channels and much else. But Josh Del Sol also published something that is a very detailed guide on how to protect yourself in your home. So that might be helpful for you.
Yeah, I agree. Josh has been doing really good work for a long time. And I agree, that was a very, I recommend the summit.
Great.
Sidney says, I have a grounding pad for my bed and never noticed any difference. I forgot about it. I balled it up in the back of the closet. I should check that ground connection in my outlet.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the voltmeter? Voltmeter? Did you mention a voltmeter? Where's that voltmeter? How do you know if your ground is out?
Oh, I just know that the company that sells, I'm familiar with what's put out by, I think it's called the Earthing Company. And it's a little, I could almost show it to you. But anyway, it's a little three-prong thing that you stick in your pad, I mean, in your outlets, and it'll give you like a combination of different lights. And if the red light's on, it's not grounded. There's a problem. I wish I could tell you what it was called, but I know that whoever's going to sell these pads, you need to be able to test and evaluate whether.
So they'll have them here.
Yeah, they'll have them. And okay.
That sounds good. So Janet's asking a question about somebody in particular. I'm not sure that without, you know, a full evaluation, we could answer that one, but give me a second. I'll open up your line, Janet, and you can ask that. Kate says, do you recommend getting the Aura app if the results are so variable? Yeah, absolutely. The results are not variable because there's anything wrong with the app. The results are variable because your body is variable. So it does give you a sense of, and you can figure out like things that you did the night before. So one of my friends, he's an osteopath, and he said that if he does 5 minutes of heart math before going to sleep, he sees major shifts on his aura over the night. He sees that the heart rate variability is much better, that his deep sleep is much better. And if he's like excited and, you know, goes to bed kind of agitated or what, stays up late watching a movie, he notices a difference. So it does give you feedback on how your activities affect the quality of your sleep. And then Janet has a question.
Oh, my turn?
Yeah.
Okay. Earlier you mentioned that your service can help with ADHD, other types of brain abnormalities. And how would we determine, by going to your website, or is there someone who we can speak to see what we should order when we have a combination of ADHD, dyslexia, and sleep disorders in an 18-year-old starting college this year?
That's a really good question. And at this point, Janet, the way that you would know is have your daughter or your son try it. And just try it. Be 5 minutes twice a day for a month and see if they see how they feel. And how they. That's the best way to just evaluate it right now.
I think you were mentioning the that there are different programs when you get there. So you're signing up for one service. You're signing up for Brain Time. And once you're in, they give you like, try the sleep one, try the ADD one, try the brain injury one. So that way you can have your child try all of them and see which one works the best.
And I want to extend that just a little bit. So there are all of the programs that are on there, Janet, will be, I designed it so that it can be helpful for a really wide variety of conditions. So ADHD, you know, I have, you know, the same, you know, group of ADHD and learning disabilities, or Asperger's and auditory processing disorders, which reflect different kinds of dominances in the brain, can all benefit from this. So we designed it to be, you know, very, I know, universal. In terms of, we don't have a one that is particular for ADHD or for autism or that kind of thing. We have these general focus, sleep, and relax, which are just different speeds of different frequency bands in the brain that can all be helpful. So is that, please let me know if I answered your question.
Well, I will encourage, it's my great nephew, and I will encourage him to try it for a month and try different settings to see what his experience teaches him with that.
Perfect. And then what I'd suggest, Janet, is have him, if he's going to start with any of these, start with relax and sleep.
Okay.
Awesome. Great. And then feel free to like email us and we will respond.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're awesome. Very welcome.
So a couple of other last questions here. Let me see if I can go back. So what advice? Okay, yeah. What is the recommended sleep cycle, type of sleep, and length? I think it's variable, right? So if you want to address
it. It varies by age.
Yeah, it's going to vary. And also we have in the module 15, week 15, the advanced sleep, we talk about sleep cycles and I describe them and how do you measure your own and see how that's going. So that's going to, it's going to vary by, I find it varies a lot by activity the day before, how late did I eat dinner, was I watching a movie before going to bed, was I on the computer right before, up until bed, a lot of that does vary.
Well, Rita Marie, I'm going to need to get going. This has just been absolutely delightful. It's just, what a great group. I'm really pleased to know this group and, you know, the work that's being done here. So.
Awesome. So thank you so, so much. Everybody want to open up, I'll open your line so you can thank Dr. Jim. Unmute all. So on the count of three, one, two, three. Oh, you might have to hit the button that says allow me to unmute, whatever.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so very much.
Great.
Thank
great.
You very much.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for being here. Appreciate it. Check it out. Go to the site. You know, I put the link in there, but I also put it, it should be on the site and I'll verify that that's the same right link, but it's drritamarie.com/braintime and check it out for a month and see, right? It can't hurt.
Just bless us all. This is great.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Hi. Good Bye. To see everybody. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.